Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors health care.
I'm extremely excited and privileged to be talking with the man I've known for a few years now, and his name is Stephen Parr.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
And welcome, and I've started getting a little background on people. So can you please start off with telling us where you live?
Right. I live in a place called Tauranga, which is in the Bay of Plenty in New Zealand. It's something like the New Zealand Gold Coast. Yes, we've got a very long, great beach, which really nice sand, good surfing. And, of course, in summer, it's a major holiday destination for a whole heap of New Zealanders coming from all sorts of towns and cities to us.
So you wouldn't have had to relocate for your retirement. It sounds like you were already living there in the ideal place.
That's right. Yes, this is the ideal place.
So can you tell us your background prior to retirement, please, Stephen?
Yes, I've had a fairly varied background. I started my first career as a forester with the government and a major New Zealand company, and then I moved into horticulture, developing kiwifruit orchards, and had my own tree and shrub nursery, and did some botanical surveys of the New Zealand native forest with an aim of protecting them. And then I moved into a completely new career as a investment advisor and financial planner, because I'd been doing that as a hobby. So that's my career, and I finished it. I had a company that I ran for about 25 years, sold that, and then reinvented myself.
Right. So can you please tell me what you did next?
Well, I realized that I'd built up a lot of knowledge and experience on money and how to use it. And so I reinvented myself as a financial educator, and I decided to help people learn what they should have been taught at school. And I started by writing my first book called Take Charge of Your Money Now.
And I believe that's going well for you over there. And there's something different too. You, I believe you're donating your book sales to charity. Can you tell me more about that, please?
Well, yes. The idea of the books is to help educate people, help people learn how to get rich. I've already got enough money to do all the travel that I want to. And so I thought I'd donate the profits from all of my books, as a series of them coming out, to various charities. And it feels good. Giving is good. It gives you a lot of satisfaction and joy. And there's some old sayings that you have to give before you receive. And I believe that.
Yes, I believe that too, and I believe it works very well. Now, I believe you've got a great passion, and I would like to talk to you about that, and that is your adventure travel bucket list you're working on. So how long have you been traveling, and what type of traveler do you call yourself?
Well, I've discovered that I enjoy traveling where there's an element of adventure. So I call myself an adventure traveler. I guess I started the bucket list idea when I was quite young. And for some reason, I wrote down a list of the things that I wanted to do in the future. And this was when I was still at school. So I wanted to, for example, have a British sports car. I wanted to learn diving. I wanted to learn flying. I wanted to go to Antarctica. And as an adult later on, I look back and I thought, jeepers, I've actually achieved all those things. And so I got serious about it. I saw the film Bucket List, which is a great film. I've started my own bucket list involving my wife, of course, and that's focused mainly on adventure travel. And we've been doing that for about 10 or 15 years now, and it's been quite amazing, some great experiences.
Okay. So describe your ideal trip and the length of time you're away from home.
That's an interesting one. I think for us, there is an ideal time, and that's somewhere between 1 and 2 months, because more than that, and you just get a bit overwhelmed. So it's good to go to some place, really immerse yourself in a new culture or a new part of the world, really appreciate that, and then you can come home and reflect on it, and also come home and realize what a great place home is.
Okay. These trips you do, are they expensive? Do you go on your own or are you with the tour group?
We started off, well, some of the trips are quite simple. Like we went on some of the great New Zealand classic treks, the Milford Track and so on. And that was pretty amazing. That was like 3 to 5 days solid trekking with a pack on your back. And then we went overseas, starting off in India, which is a fantastic country because it's so different. And we went first with Intrepid Travel, and they really know their stuff. And we were very pleased. We sort of fell upon them. And we've been back to India 4 times with them, to a different place, different part of India each time, because we found they could really take people to places that they would not otherwise get to and have great experiences. But having said that, we've often tacked on our own travel after we've finished with a travel company. We've run with a number of them, and sometimes we've picked a different one for different places. For example, we've been to Nepal, we've been trekking in Nepal, we've been to Tibet, and I've already mentioned India. So we've used different travel companies with each one. And then some of the really specialized areas, which can be quite expensive, like going to the North Pole, that used to be the absolute top of my bucket list. And I was amazed when I found that I had achieved it. So we went with a specialized company called Quark, and they actually hired a nuclear-powered Russian icebreaker, one of the largest in the world, and we trundled up to the North Pole in that.
Sounds absolutely amazing. And would you just like to tell me a little bit about what you're doing next? Because I believe you're ready to head off on another trip.
Yes, in fact, next Friday we'll be heading off overseas back to India again and Sri Lanka. This time we're going to northern India, around the area of Dharamsala, and that's right up north in the foothills of the Himalayas. So it's a great region to be. There's some fantastic scenery, and we can do some short day treks sort of into the hills and through the forests there. And then after we spent 3 weeks there, I go down to Chennai, visit somebody that I met online through a course on writing ebooks, and so she and I converse. We co-coach each other on a Skype call each week, and then after 2 days catching up with her, we go to Sri Lanka, where I was actually born, but I left Sri Lanka before I was one, and I'm going back there because I haven't been back before, and also to meet up with a young lad that I'm sponsoring through a child fund. And we're going into a remote village, meeting him, his family, the villagers, and just seeing what my money is doing to help other people.
It's always terrific to do these things, but what you're doing, it's going to be very special meeting up with this family. I'm sure it's not only going to make you feel good, but it's going to make them feel good and privileged as well.
That's right. I hope it'll be a great experience all round. I'm sure it will be.
When you go on these trips, what level of comfort do you have? Because I'm a bit of a baby. I think I there's no way I can sleep on the ground.
Well, I think we've moved upscale a little bit from that, but we are still pretty feet on the ground. We like doing trips where we use local transport. We see and talk to local people. We are sometimes hosted in local homes, and that's dramatically better than going in an air-conditioned bus from one air-conditioned luxury hotel to the next, where I really don't believe you see the real country.
Have you got any unusual experiences on your travel that you would care to share?
Yes, perhaps the most scary and interesting was coming back from Antarctica through Argentina. We went to the airport to fly back to New Zealand, and the airport suddenly closed. There were some lots of people protesting outside, and then suddenly there were police running around with guns. They closed the airport. We were just told to sit down where we were. We were given no information. Then after a while, all the staff just disappeared. They did a runner, and the airport was closed down. Some people barricaded themselves in offices, and that went on for quite a few hours. And then suddenly somebody came in and said, "Aussie, Kiwi, come now, your plane go." And so we grabbed our gear and followed this person outside. And sure enough, there was an aircraft there. We piled into it. They just seemed to sort of accept that we were who we were, and the plane took off. I managed to ring my wife and say we're taking off, and that's when the second leg of that adventure started, because she was organising a shuttle to go up to Auckland Airport from Tauranga to pick me up, and she gave them the details of the plane when it was due to land, and then after some time, they rang back and said, "There is no such plane. There's nothing expected."
Oh, wow.
And she had been monitoring it on the internet and she could see a picture of all of the planes that were, gradually coming into land. And there was our one moving down. And then it was taken off. So it wasn't there anymore. Uh-huh. She rang the airport. They couldn't help. She rang our national airline, Air New Zealand, who said, "Well, we can talk to the right people, and we'll ring you back." They ran back and said, "Look, it's a mystery. It appears that the plane did take off, but it's been taken off the board. It's not expected to land. Nobody knows where it is."
Oh no, she'd be panicking.
Yes, and of course we were just sitting in this aircraft flying. And so there was a bit of a scare in New Zealand. And eventually we did land, and I rang her up and said, "I'm here." Yes.
So obviously you and your wife don't always travel together from that story.
No, she doesn't like cold places and I do. So when I went to Antarctica, where I actually slept out on the ice overnight, without a tent, because they thought the weather was going to be fine, except that when I woke up, I was covered in snow. So it was a good job she wasn't there on that trip. And then for the North Pole trip, she decided to opt out of that. But everything else we've done together.
So are you traveling light? I mean, are you backpacking or do you take suitcases?
No, never a suitcase. I know that there are some very clever soft cases now with wheels on, but we are backpackers. As we get older, we realize the joys of packing light. And so each trip that we go on, we try to get lighter and lighter. But apart from the serious bush trekking and trekking up mountains, on a lot of these adventure tours, we don't have to carry our packs very, very far. It's getting off a train to the next bus depot, or off a bus and down the road to find a tuk-tuk to drive us to a hotel, that sort of thing.
And how do you record your adventures? Do you bring back souvenirs, or do you have, how do you, if you're traveling that light, how do you have memories of your trips?
Well, you remember I said that we travel light, so there is no room for souvenirs. It's all recorded in our memory and in the camera. So luckily there are some brilliant digital cameras with large storage capacity, so we've got a lot of pictures, and if our memory fails, well, we go back to the pictures to remind us.
Okay, so can you give us some tips? What would you be your top three tips for success in traveling?
Depends on the sort of traveling that somebody is interested in doing. For the lightweight sort of backpacking adventure travel, I suggest looking at modern travel clothes. Some of the modern stores, like Kathmandu, for example, is a good one that's in both New Zealand and Australia. There's more and more high-tech material that comes out, which is both warm and light. And because we don't take much, and therefore we have to wash it every day or couple of days, some of the modern fabrics, you can almost, in a hot climate, you can wash it, wring it out in a high-tech towel, and then just put it on and go outside, and it'll be bone dry, sort of within half an hour.
And when you're going to a cold country?
Ah, well, sometimes we go to both, which is that's difficult because then I have to take two sets of gear, cold gear and light gear. For cold countries, it's all about layering, not just having one big heavy overcoat, but having a lot of high-tech fabrics and merino wool, and you just layer them.
So, obviously, do you enjoy what you're doing, and how often do you go travelling?
We try to do one major trip a year, which would be a sort of 4 or 5 weeks, and then sometimes in the New Zealand winter, we decide to take off to some warmer place. For example, this year, and this is another occasion where my wife Pamela is not coming with me, my eldest daughter and I are going tall ship sailing. We fly to Fiji and then spend 12 days, I think it is, on a tall ship. That's the old high mast square riggers where my daughter will climb up the rigging and be up there sort of helping to release the sails. And I will have my feet firmly planted on the deck, pulling on ropes to hoist or lower the sails. And so that's something else, is one of my passions, is tall ship sailing. And I've done quite a bit of that, and now I've been on five or six different ships.
That's really interesting. Is this something anyone can do? Do you have to have prior experience?
No, you don't. They're very, very well organized, and depending on your adventure level, skill level, and head for heights, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the deck, as well as work that needs to be done aloft. And usually there's plenty of young, agile people who are love the thrill of getting up on the mast and ropes.
What is the most satisfying part of your adventure travelling?
Well, of course it's being there, because we go to places with a high level of expectation. And we research where we want to go. We do a great deal of detailed planning. My career has, or one of them, has been in financial planning. So I'm a planner. I plan things. I plan how to get there, where to go, where not to go, plan the equipment. But having said that, you also have to be open enough to take on whatever experiences happen. And on one occasion in India, two states were sort of almost at war with each other because one was using the water that was supposed to be available to the state further down the river. And so they were going to close the borders, and we got news of that, and so we had to hop in our jeeps and hightail it at about 2 o'clock in the morning, across the state to get through the border. and nearly ran into a few elephants on the way who were sort of wandering up the road in the middle of the night.
What is the average age of the people on these trips?
Well, that's an interesting question, because there seem to be two types. There's the young people who are taking their gap year, or just they just want to go and do it, so they do. And then on the other hand, you've got the older people who are heading towards retirement or are in retirement, who have looked after their money and have got enough to have an enjoyable retirement. And hence my book called sort of Take Charge of Your Money Now. That's to encourage people to do just that, so that they will have more financial freedom in later years.
That's good advice. What have you experienced with the people that you meet when you're travelling? Do you keep in touch with them?
No, we haven't managed that. They come from a wide range of backgrounds and countries. Probably the oldest guy was over 80 in Tibet. He was an experienced mountaineer from the Switzerland, and he didn't talk much. He talked a bit of English, but he wasn't actually as fit as he still thought he was. And in the very high altitudes, we were approaching the Everest base camp on the Tibetan side, which is different from the normal one. And he actually lost his sight completely because of altitude sickness. He got it back again, but a lot of us, myself included, it was a struggle.
So you need to be fairly fit by the sounds of that.
Yes, anything to do with adventure travel. My wife and I are out pounding the pavements every morning at 6 o'clock for an hour. It's just the repetition of that. It's just building up stamina and just making sure that your arms and legs work properly. And I guess the greatest tip is, if you're constructing a bucket list, make sure that all the things that where you really need to be fit, you get done first, because sooner or later some bits tend to get a bit sore and they don't work as well as they used to. And eventually you have to perhaps move down to sitting on a deck chair on a cruise ship.
There's plenty of choices there, that's for sure. So how has your life changed, do you think, since you've retired?
Well, I think it's the freedom. I did expect to have more time, but that doesn't appear to be the case. I fill my time up with writing my books. The next one is called The Aspiring Millionaire. I'm writing that at the moment. That's a guide for young people to enable them to become millionaires. So I hope my work will enable hundreds of people to become millionaires. And I've discovered a bit of a passion for teaching, because I know the money subject fairly well, and I'm passionate about helping people learn how to use their money. So I'm finding myself in all sorts of roles as a guest lecturer in like one course on a certificate of money management. I teach in there, and I work for a government as an independent contractor for a government commission that organizes courses within large companies. So talking to groups of staff over a 10-week period. For 3 hours a time, groups of sort of 6 to 20, and it's really great deal of satisfaction seeing people sort of almost, you know, rise to the occasion as they get more knowledge and take more charge of their money.
That sounds like it's a very satisfying thing to be doing in your retirement. What would you say your greatest passion in life is then?
Well, I haven't. Apart from the adventure travel, it's the outdoors, and because I live in New Zealand, it's the New Zealand forest. I'm an amateur botanist, so I know the names of virtually every tree and shrub in the forest. I go trekking in the forest a lot.
It's been great catching up with you and listening and hearing all about your adventures and your passions. If anyone would like to catch up with Stephen and find out more about his books, then pop on over to his website, www.stephenparrbooks.com. Until next time.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.